Good morning. I'm Lila Pine, and I've been a UU for 26 years and a James Reeb member for 14. I have served on the former Peace, Justice, and Sustainability Committee, chaired five Reeb Rave fundraisers, the Sanctuary Leadership Team, the Immigrant and Refugee Rights Team, and the I'm on the steering committee of the Dane Sanctuary Coalition that Reeb is a part of. I am the daughter of two Russian Jewish refugees who barely escaped the pogroms alive in Tsarist Russia as children. And yes, they were quite old when I was born. Their families were either shot dead by the Russian Cossack soldiers or burned alive in their cottages. My father was born in Davinsk, Russia in 1896, and my mother in 1903. Their city is now part of Latvia. I grew up hearing my mother's horror stories about the trauma she endured as a child in Russia when she and her grandmother hid underground in a small dirt tunnel under the floor of the one-room house, and Cossacks on horseback were shooting Jews in the streets or burning them alive in their homes. She was 5 years old the day they stormed into her grandmother's house while her whole body shook uncontrollably while hiding in the underground tunnel as her grandmother put her hand over my mother's mouth to stop her from crying. When the Cossacks left, the cottage was destroyed, but they managed to survive. The next day, my grandparents started making plans for a trip to America. When I was 10, I witnessed the remains of a cross burning at the far end of our block in front of the home in the small town in New Jersey that I grew up in. It was the first and only Black family in my 18 years there to move into our little all-white town. And I had gotten attached to their little girls and was looking forward to playing with them when I came to find a burned cross on their front yard. The whole family in tears and moving their furniture back into the moving truck. When I was 13, I watched the live TV news coverage of the police and Klan violence in the South against Black people who were beaten and killed for nonviolent civil disobedience. That August, I watched in amazement the live coverage of the March on Washington, with millions of people listening to Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. I watched live coverage on our little black and white TV of all the protests of the bombing of the Black church that killed four little Black girls. By 1965, at the age of 15, I had lost my faith in God. But I participated in my first march in New York for the Voting Rights Act, the original one, 1965. At 18, I joined the marches in Madison against the U.S. war in Vietnam. And I've been a committed activist ever since. My faith is not in a god or goddess, but in the human race, in humankind. I started believing in the power of social movements, and the faith and stamina I saw in oppressed people that I worked with. My faith, what keeps me going in these dark times, is my work, my actions in the ongoing progressive movements and organizing for racial, gender, and economic justice. for all oppressed peoples. What gives me the stamina to go on when all is dark is listening to the incredible faith and hope and resiliency of the traumatized immigrants I meet at the border and Black friends and acquaintances in Madison whom I have worked with. How do they remain resilient? How do they keep their faith? It's amazing. And the more I talk to oppressed peoples, the more I realize what the Biden presidential inaugural poet Amanda Gorman said is the possibility of freedom, belief in the possibility of justice, of true inclusive democracy. That's what gives me hope for the future if we do the work. My motto now is from Dr. Cornel West, who stated, justice is what love looks like in public.
My name is Eric Gunn. I'm a relatively recent member of this congregation. I joined in November of 2020. Before that, I lived in Racine, Wisconsin. A few years ago, when I was living there, I started signing some email messages within my church community and related communications in larger UU context with the phrase in faith and solidarity. I started that when I was at Lone Pew Brown Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine, and then have continued to do so on occasion here. Before I explain what I mean by faith in that phrase, I want to tell you what I have faith in. I've grown up believing fundamentally in pluralism. That was part of my upbringing. My mother brought me up with one foot in the Episcopal Church and one foot in the Religious Society of Friends or Quakers. My father taught anthropology at a historically Black college and specialized in African studies, and I learned from childhood that ethnic, cultural, and religious diversity is as natural as the air we breathe. And I learned all these things while living in a part of the country that was heavily flavored by religious fundamentalism and evangelicalism, but that was not what I grew up with. When I first entered a UU church in Rockford, Illinois on Easter morning in 1981, I was about 24 years old, and I was greeted by the Renberg window. It's a stained glass representation depicting symbols from six world religions and the UU flaming chalice. And I felt spiritually seen at that moment in a very powerful way that I'd never experienced before. That window is reproduced on this pin that I put on my mask. Over the decades, my embrace of diversity and pluralism has expanded to include much more than religious belief. And that is what I have faith in. But what is faith itself? What does faith mean? And for a long time, I heard that word, sort of as what was expressed in our reading this morning, as just a synonym for belief. And so it was kind of problematic that way. When I started attending this UU church in Rockford, I was working at a newspaper, and I chatted with the editorial columnist there about this. And I don't even remember why I brought it up with Pat Cunningham, his name was, a liberal and possibly lapsed Catholic, that I joined the UU church. And I don't even recall what he asked me next, but what I do remember is he, in his question, used the word faith as a different synonym for religious tradition, you know, Christian faith, Jewish faith, Hindu faith, so on. And he did so, and this is what was the important thing, he did so with a quip that sort of zeroed in on Unitarian Universalism's pluralistic, non-creedal, often agnostic theological perspective. Was faith, he wondered, in passing, even an appropriate term for it? I took it as a gentle and humorous aside, not as a mean-spirited one. But it also captured the sort of problematic nature of that word faith, that faith in this case equals dogma. And so for much of my life, I've seen the word constricting in that way. I have come to see it in a different light. In his books on progressive Christian theology, the late Marcus Borg says that rather than belief in the truth of a set of assertions, faith is more accurately and fully understood as trust. It is a sense of trust that allows a person, he says, to reject a narrow and rigid beliefs without the anxiety that in doing so, we might be excluded by our lack of belief. And I've come to a place where faith has all those meanings. I believe in pluralism and diversity. I trust them, and I'm also loyal to them, and I motivated them by them in how I interact with the world. Thank you.
Morning. I'm Mike Stimson, and my pronouns are he and his. I've been a member of James Reeb since 2019. I've sung in the choir, I participate in several small group activities, and I volunteer with the audiovisual team. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share a little bit about my ongoing faith journey this morning. Mark Twain once wrote, "Faith is believing what you know ain't so." I've thought the same thing about faith. I grew up Catholic, steeped in its rituals and fully believing in God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit, the virgin birth, the miracles, all of it. But my Catholic upbringing was actually surprisingly liberal. I was taught that the Bible was not always literally reliable, and that there were plenty of things, like the age of the earth, for example, that the Bible got wrong. It's tough to accept the literal truth of the Bible and also be receptive to the overwhelming evidence that the Bible is not literally true. If there were a God who wrote the Bible to be literally true and then put a ton of evidence in the world that it's not literally true, what would be the point of that? To try to trick us? To see if we would believe an old book instead of the evidence we were given the sense to understand? Well, I eventually got to thinking that maybe my religion wasn't special and correct, and that it was as fictional as the Greek and Roman and Norse mythologies that I enjoyed reading, and that themselves used to be religions. Our universalist predecessors questioned the then predominant Christian beliefs and ended up proposing that God intended everyone to go to heaven, that there is no hell. I don't really believe this vision either, because I don't believe in a God with intentions controlling our lives and afterlives. After I lost my Catholic faith, I read and thought and searched for truth and meaning. And I've been searching for beliefs because they can be comforting in the face of the unknown, and they can help guide our behaviors in complex situations. So the first thing I started with was a belief in the scientific method as a way of understanding the world. And this is a faith. I can't prove it's true, but it feels correct to me. The scientific method is this. First, you make observations about the world. Then, based on those observations, you make a hypothesis about how the world works. And that hypothesis can help you make predictions about the world. You then test the hypothesis by conducting experiments to see if your hypothesis is wrong. This is really important. You can only try to prove something wrong. The scientific method assumes that there is no experiment that you can do that can prove a hypothesis correct. There are only experiments that you can do to prove them wrong. And then after you've done as many experiments as you can think of to negate your hypothesis, and if none of those experiments do negate your hypothesis, then you can call your hypothesis a theory. But even then, science does not consider a theory to be objective fact. It remains open to revisiting and revising or discarding if new evidence comes along to show that the theory is incorrect. In the end, the best science can do is offer a theory and accept that nothing is certain. The best test of theories could be wrong, and science must accept new evidence negating a theory and revise the theory accordingly. So I have faith that the world can be better understood using the scientific method. And I have also come to develop some tentative beliefs about the nature of the universe and the nature of beings that are intelligent centers of experience and action, like conscious life forms, like me. One way I think about reality based on our current scientific understanding, is that everything is connected to everything else. This is consistent with our current scientific understanding of the universe. There are two types of things in the universe: particles of matter and energy. The energy mediates forces between the particles of matter. Every particle in the universe affects every other through energy fields. And if we had enough information about the current state of the universe, we could know everything that happened before and everything that will ever happen. These pictures of reality make some people uncomfortable. If the future is as fixed as the past, what about free will? To compound that discomfort, I've read scientific studies that purport to show that free will is an illusion. That most times our conscious intention to act follows the start of the action. But I believe it diminishes our experiences to call free will an illusion. Free will is part of how we experience our lives as we're living them. Just because my actions might be predictable from the natural laws of the universe, they're not predictable by me, and I feel like I make choices. Otherwise, life would be like a movie. It would feel passive, and it doesn't feel that way to me. It feels active. In developing my faith, I've adopted the belief that each of us are fundamentally the same. We are each centers of experience and intelligence and action, and make sense that makes sense of the universe through each of our individual experiences, and act on the universe based on our understandings of the universe. I have faith that there is an objective reality, but that each of us only experiences part of it. While I want to understand objective reality, I believe that I can't, because understanding reality objectively requires more perspectives than just mine. I have my perspective based on my experience. Others have their perspectives based on their experiences. If their experiences are very similar to mine, they're probably going to have perspectives that are also very similar. In fact, if you were born with exactly my physical form and had all of my same experiences, it would be you up here talking right now. There's a story called The Egg by Andy Weir that takes this idea to an interesting conclusion. Imagine when you die, you're reincarnated. And each time you die, you're reincarnated over and over. Sometimes as someone who lived before your most recent life, and sometimes as someone who lived after your most recent life. And you do this until you've lived everyone's lives that ever lived and ever will live. Only then would you have sufficient experiences to understand the world, and then you would finally be mature enough to evolve into the next stage of being. This is a story, it's not exactly what I believe, but I do believe that every one of us is part of the same thing, and at our core of our beings, we are the same thing. This belief helps me to be more empathetic. And for this reason, I think it's a responsible belief. My faith is a journey. It's work, and it's a lot of abstract thinking. It's an active thing for me. And in the spirit of scientific inquiry, my faith will always be changeable based on new experiences and evidence.